Prime Time replay from Money FM 89.3.
Family, a missing finger, an old superstition that you may have heard of. Men who turn into man-eating tigers. These are at the heart of a book that I'm reading today. I'm Michelle Martin, and I'm reading The Night Tiger. And I'm loving this hard-to-categorize novel set in the 1930s colonial Malaya. I'm speaking today to the Malaysian-American writer Chu Yang Si. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Michelle. Thank you so much for having me.
So The Night Tiger is set in colonial Malaya, and it offers a stunning look at history and Chinese superstition and culture told in two alternating perspectives. Now, every book, I think, leads us, the reader, on a journey of discovery. So I want to ask you, what do you hope that your books, and this one in particular, will lead a reader to discover about Malaya?
Well, you know, it's been said that the past is another country. And I myself, you know, when I was doing research for this book, I found so much about local history that I hadn't known before. And I hope that when people read it, that they'll enjoy it, as a murder mystery. And it also functions at the same time as a ghost story and an exploration of who we are and what we're looking for in life.
So murder mystery and ghost story, how would you categorize? Is that how you think of your writing?
Well, I think, you know, it's hard because I did not realize this, but when I sold my first novel, The Ghost Bride, I was told by my agent that, you know, you're crossing genres, and that's not always a good thing. I hadn't realized this, but for book markets, they do like you to have a genre so they can, you know, decide where to put your book. And mine was like, is it historical fiction? Is it a ghost story? You know, is it a murder mystery? And the same is sort of true of The Night Tiger.
Yeah.
So I'm just very grateful to be published at all.
That's great.
I'm honored that you're reading it. Thank you.
Oh, I loved Ghost Bride. That's one of the reasons I wanted to speak with you when I heard you have another novel out called The Night Tiger. So I love The Ghost Bride. And I want to ask you about that, actually, because that took us to Malacca. Mm-hmm. And, it introduced us to the different levels of hell, all sorts of superstition, joss-sticks, burning paper houses, the whole concept of a ghost bride. So when it comes to superstitions, which may be common in Asia but not the rest of the world, what is your take on how you bring local superstition to a global audience?
Well, you know, I was always both intrigued and terrified by this practice of burning paper houses and paper money. And partly it's because, you know, during the Festival of the Hungry Ghosts, you can see really elaborate houses, you know, cars, bath houses, food, etc. And it's made of this brightly colored paper. So it looks almost like a toy. You know, they look like toy houses. And at the same time as children, you are told you absolutely cannot play with these. You know? So don't touch them, don't play with them. And so there is this tension between what is permitted and what is not permitted. And I was interested to realize that abroad, most people have no idea of this. They talk about, you know, the Western world is quite aware of the Egyptian practice of burying grave goods.
Yes.
And they do not know that Chinese are not just burying them, but they're burning them. And not once, but every year, or, you know, whenever you feel that your relatives need more substance in the underworld. So I thought it was interesting. To be honest, I wasn't really thinking about so much of an international audience as writing what I thought was fascinating. But a really neat side thing was like, I'm glad other people find that interesting too.
That's great. Like, I'm always curious whether or not you're a New York Times bestselling author because of Ghost Bride. And along the way, did you have editors saying, look, help someone from outside of Asia see or imagine what could be completely foreign to them?
Yes. You know, that is, I think, always the tension of writing outside your culture. You know, people have asked me, like, who is your audience? Who are you writing for? As I said, I first write things that I something personally interesting to me. Although my mother said, this is so morbid.
Did she say that about the night tiger or the first one?
Both of them.
Both, okay.
One of them is marriage of the dead, the other one is man-eating tigers. Couldn't you be more cheerful? She said, that's what, you know, mums are like that. And I said, I think first you have to write about what you find fascinating. So if you're not interested in it, the reader will also pick up the fact like, oh, you're just writing this to get from A to B in your book. So that's one thing. But I think there is also the question of making it accessible to people without being pedantic about it.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's always an issue with historical fiction in general. You know, most writers I know of historical fiction do a tremendous amount of research so that you can build the world in your head. But you also have to be careful. I mean, you might know everything about rat populations during, you know, the Black Death, but your readers don't really want to hear all the statistics. So then you have to be able to pass out the information in an interesting way.
Yeah, I'm just always curious about how authors decide how much of history they decide to let into the novel and, you know, when to stop the research, I suppose, and just go with your imagination. So tell us about your approach to using research in your writing.
Well, you know, for both, for The Night Tiger, a lot of the action takes place in this Chinese shop house. And my grandfather, actually, my grandparents lived near Ipoh in one of these small towns. My parents also grew up there. And my grandfather actually lived in a shop house like that. That sort of shop house also shows up in The Ghost Bride. So I don't know what that says. But during my childhood, I always felt that it was such a dark and cavernous place, you know, mysterious and yet very mundane. So I put that in. And then when I was researching the book, I looked up for a lot of statistics about tigers. Tigers in the Malay archipelago, the numbers, how many of them were hunted. It's really interesting. There were more leopards than tigers. More kills were actually attributed to leopards than tigers. But they found that in general, people always prefer to say that it was a tiger, not a leopard. So lots and lots of detail like that. And then you have to think about, well, do people really want to read 15 pages about tigers? Maybe not. And that's where it's helpful to have, you know, my agent looks read book first, and then you have an editor. And my book was too long. And part of the reason why it was long was not just because of details like this, but because people were always eating too much in the book. And so she said, could you like get rid of some of these dinner scenes and how many banquets are they having?
Oh,
so, yeah,
I totally
right.
understand that. Yeah.
There's definitely a balance and you have to feel your way through the story.
I'm speaking with the Malaysian-American writer Chu Yangzi. She is also New York Times best-selling author. Her latest book is titled The Night Tiger. It's terrific. It's sweeping. It's history. There's family. It's macabre. There's a missing finger in it and an old superstition about men who turn into man tigers. Now, I'm curious about this, you know. I actually heard of this superstition growing up in Asia. People would talk about the Indonesian islands and men and women turning into sort of were-tigers. So tell us about why you decided to sort of build a whole book around this superstition.
Well, I think partly because it's so weird. You know, it's such a strange and creepy idea. And, you know, one thing that I've told like American audiences is everyone knows the legend of the werewolf, right? It's a man who changes into a wolf and goes out from the village into the forest to kill and eat. But the Asian were-tiger is almost exactly the opposite. It is an animal that wears a human skin and comes out of the jungle to knock on your door and eat you in your house. So it's very disturbing, and it also brings up all sorts of, I think, literary parallels. Because when you do meet people and you wonder, like, what is this person really thinking? You know, what is going on in their head? And, of course, the whole idea of shapeshifters is that they transgress norms, you know, so like, you're not supposed to go around killing and eating other people, right? So there's just so many parallels. And there is also parallel with colonialism. I was interested to find that, in, you know, there was some equivalency that when the colonials first came, that the locals thought of them as, what are these people? They look human, but they are different.
Right.
You know, and they have come to eat us or conquer us. So I thought that was just super, super interesting.
Oh, it's so interesting when you describe it like that, because it helps us understand your book and your work, which across two books have sort of moved between worlds, you know, the natural and the supernatural, or the seen and the unseen. So that was great to just hear you talking about the tigers. But let's find out more about you. You graduated from Harvard, worked as a management consultant before you gave the world The Ghost Bride, which I highly recommend everybody run out and read after The Night Tiger. So when did writing become something you thought you could do professionally?
Well, you know, I always wrote just to please myself, and I think a lot of people do. You know, it is a creative urge, and it doesn't necessarily have to be writing. You could be knitting, you know, you could be drawing, painting, cross-stitching. I think it is a wonderful human thing to be creative. So I'd always done this and never thought that it would be any kind of stable job. You know, Asian parents are like, you need to get a proper job. So it was not till I'd been writing short stories. I worked on a really terrible first novel. And when I had my kids and I became a stay-at-home housewife, I started to write mostly perhaps to escape from daily life. So I would write late at night, and I wrote The Ghost Bride. And, you know, people have asked me, like, how did you get published? The honest answer is that I literally Googled, how do you get published? And then they said, you need a literary agent.
Yes.
And I Googled, how do you get a literary agent? And then you just need to submit a query letter. You know, that is a great thing for shy people, that your writing, if you send it out to the world, will speak for you. And that's helpful.
And is that what you did? Because that's my whole next series of questions. And apparently it's all going to be answered by Google, huh?
Yeah. Well, I would like to encourage everyone who is writing or wants to write and tell them that you do not need connections. You do not need to know anybody, because I didn't know anyone. I came out of what they call the slush pile, which makes you sound like some sort of monster. You know, I came out of the slush pile.
Emerged from the pile.
But I know many, many other authors who came just the same way.
How many books, how many of those letters did you have to send out before you got your yes?
Well, a good way to do it is to batch your letters. So you decide, like, which agents you should do some research, like who takes the kind of writing that you like.
Yeah.
And then you can send them out in batches, like, because I think you can query each agent only once for each book.
Oh.
So I just batch them, like I send them out in fives and fives. So you see if anyone's biting, and if no one bites, then you think, oh, maybe I should change my letter. And I think you sent out a total of about 20 or 30 letters before you start to get answers. And people will tell you, like, I want to see the first 10 pages.
Right.
Or no, thank you.
And did you start this search for getting a literary agent once your first book was complete? Or did you do it prior to that?
Well, for fiction, you actually have to have a complete manuscript. You know, nonfiction can be sold on spec. So you can actually go and tell someone, hey, I'm going to write this book. It's about cats. And it's going to be called I Can Has Cheeseburger. And then people might say, oh,
you're a natural. You're a natural. I want to read that book.
So, I mean, I think that literally happened with I Can Has Cheeseburger, right? The nonfiction you can sell on spec. But but fiction, they want to see the whole manuscript. I did talk to another author. He said that he'd sent out the first 10 chapters and he hadn't finished the book.
Mm.
And an agent said to him, I want to see the whole thing. And he said, no problem. And then he ran off and, you know, stayed up like for 2 days finishing it. And he said, I really don't recommend that to anyone.
Yeah, I get that. Some people need pressure to get anything done. But, you know, your book, coming back to your terrific book, The Night Tiger, it's such an incredible premise, right? A young houseboy in 1930s colonial Malaya is tasked to search for his dead master's missing finger, which turns up, we won't say where. We got to leave something for the listener and reader. So tell me, do your plots sort of develop on a big whiteboard before you get started, or sort of along the way?
Oh, I wish. And in fact, my husband has said to me several times, why don't you organize this plot? You know, some people write like that. I know people who do, and they have, like J.K. Rowling, have you seen her notebooks?
Yeah.
I think it's really impressive, and they know what happens in chapter 3 and chapter 43. Mm. Unfortunately, I tend to write organically, which means by the seat of my pants. So I don't often know. For example, for The Night Tiger, when I wrote it, I wrote the first chapter pretty much as you see in the book, because I thought it's like a dream, a scene that appears. What a strange scene. You know, why is he telling this child to find his finger? And I wrote it and I set it aside for a while. And then, you know, some months later, some ideas percolated through and I started to write again. And that's how, I'm afraid that's how it went.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. So you're going to meet readers tomorrow at Kinokuniya, but thank you for giving us, you know, rolling out the carpet and helping us understand more of this terrific book. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It was such a pleasure and an honor. Thank you.
She lives out in California, but you'll be able to meet my featured author, Malaysian-American Chu Yangzi. Find out all about her new book tomorrow at Kinokuniya. You'll be able to meet the author from 2 to 3 p.m. This has been Influence, and I'm reading again The Night Tiger, and you should too.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.